Hi, I'm Ann. And every Friday of my life, I fly somewhere in the country to speak, and I board a plane, and I'm lost in the crowd of passengers. And some days I get on my 10-speed and I ride down the road and cars whiz by and no one even notices me. Or I slip into a booth and I order a hamburg and I am just one everyday young woman in my world. But I'm out to move my world, and I can. You watch. You wait. You'll see. I have a giant of a God in me, and he is love, and that changes everything. And if Jesus Christ could move the world through 12 everyday men with dirt under their fingernails and maybe mud between their toes, Jesus Christ can move the world through me too, because I'm linked to the very same Christ they were linked to. I boarded a plane, and it was a 747, and it was going from Boston to San Francisco. And when I boarded, I thought, Jesus, I hope you don't sit anyone next to me because I'm so tired. And I knew that was 6 hours I could work. But when I boarded the plane, I noticed there was a businessman in the seat next to me, and he was typical with his sport coat over his lap and the Wall Street Journal app. And I just sat down, and I looked at him and said, hello, sir, my name is Ann. He said, how do you do? I'm Hap. I said, there's a little song I bet you'd really like. He said, I beg your pardon? Well, I said, there's a song I know you just love. If you heard it and I could sing it for you real fast. And well, he didn't know. No one had ever volunteered to sing for him on an airplane before. I said, sir, I'll keep it down soft and I'll do it fast. But if you hear this song, I know you'll really like it. Well, all right, he said, could you hurry? And I straightened my back and I looked at this sophisticated businessman, and with all of the God in me, I began to sing something beautiful, something good. All my confusion, sir. Do you know what confusion is? I do. I felt confused before. He understood all I had to offer him was brokenness and strife, but he's making something beautiful out of my life. So, do you know who I'm singing about? Jesus Christ. He's the Lord of my life. He laughs with me and cries with me and walks lonely roads with me, and he is love. And he said, could you stop right there? He said, I like the song. I like your song. But he said, I'm sorry, Anne. I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God, and I never have. I'm a father of 5 children, and my wife is a strong Catholic. But I don't want anything to do with God. Wow, I said, a real live atheist? I've hardly ever met a real live atheist. Sir, do you know why I believe in God? I believe in God because he is love. And Glasser the psychologist says that anybody in the world can make something out of their lives if they have one person to really love them. One person to love their secret sins, their failures, their flops, their dreams, their hurts. If you have one person to love you through and through, your life can be special. And just like that, Hap turned his face to the window, and all I could see was this side of his face. And I began to see tears running down out of that side of his face, and I didn't know exactly what to do because he was crying and the plane hadn't even taken off yet. I just sat there, and in my heart I said, Jesus, whatever he feels inside, I know you care and you understand, and be with him. The plane must have been airborne about 10 minutes when he turned to me and his face was wet and he said, Ann, I may be a successful businessman and a father of 5 children. But he said, I've never had anyone love me the way you describe love. And for 5.5, 6 hours from Boston to San Francisco, Hap and I laughed together and cried and listened to each other and learned from each other and talked. When the plane was on descending to San Francisco, I just reached out and tapped him on the shoulder and said, Hap, I bet you wouldn't believe God set me next to you on this plane. And he laughed and said, I bet I would believe he did. The plane taxied in and pulled up to the gate, and I grabbed at my bags and I jumped up because I always like to be one of the first people out of the plane. I started to move into the aisle, and then I turned around and I reached out and I grabbed his hand. And I looked at him, and he cried and I cried, and all I could think to say was, Hap, someday, somewhere, Jesus Christ is going to invade your life. And when he does, real love will live.
I believe for you. I dream for you. I'm glad we're friends. And he couldn't speak. He could only nod his head. And I deboarded that plane and I got lost in a big airport. I was just a simple, everyday person. But I felt I had moved my world in a little way because I had reminded a businessman that Jesus Christ is alive and he is love and he lives for everyone, anywhere. And about a week later, I received a letter from Hap and it said something like this, "Dear Anne, the 6 hours from Boston to San Francisco were the most significant hours of my whole life. For the first time, I believed God is. Because when you said goodbye, friend, for the first time in my life, I felt I had really found a friend. Thanks. Hap." Come walk with me, please, through field and forest. Come climb the hills and hear that song. For even hills resound with music. They just can't help it. God gives a song. For whom? For you. For me. For the lady next door, the man across the street, the little boy without a dad, for anyone, anywhere, he promises a song because he's love, and love does that. My sister flew in to see me because her husband was on business in New York, and we had been out jogging and playing tennis. It was Saturday. I knew I was to fly to Miami that afternoon to do a convention. But I thought the ticket agent said my plane was to leave at 2:20, and he always just tells me, and I never look at my ticket, I just get there. Well, when we staggered through the door at noon, hot and tired, I said, "Jan, I think I should check my ticket. I have this weird feeling inside that maybe I've done something wrong." Well, I checked the ticket, and it said my plane was to leave for Miami at 12:20 instead of 2:20, so obviously I missed it. I burst into tears and ran to start the bathwater and told Jan to call the airport. I made her call 4 different times. I kept hoping she'd get a more creative ticket agent. But every ticket agent said, "I'm sorry, lady, your sister will have to go through Atlanta, Georgia. She will be an hour late into Miami." Well, I was sort of angry. I mean, I'd missed the plane. I was going to get to Miami late. And I barely made my flight to Atlanta. When I got off in Atlanta, I thought, I think I'll freshen up in the ladies' room. And I went into a ladies' room and dumped all my things and went in and sort of cleaned up and came back and started to pick up all of my bags when I noticed this lady was still sitting there. And I just said, "Excuse me, ma'am, you have a long layover?" She said, "8:00 tonight. 8:00 tonight? I said, "That's terrible. Why are you here so long?" She said, "Because my baby sister died and her funeral was today and it's the first connecting flight out. I'm sorry. I didn't know today was such an ugly day for you." In my mind, I remembered someone telling me that the best way to help someone work through their grief is to let them talk about it. And I looked at my watch. I had about 25 minutes. I picked up all my stuff out of the chair. I put it on the floor. I sat down and said, "My name is Anne. What is yours?" She said, "Frances." I said, "Frances, tell me about your little sister." And she began to tell me what a beautiful little sister she had, how special she was, how alive and young and full of life. And she didn't know who God was, but whoever he was, she didn't like him. She didn't appreciate him at all. He must not like beautiful things, because if he had, he would never have taken her little sister out of the world. And she was bitter and hurt and lonely and scared. And it all oozed out of her, and all I did was sit there and listen. "Yes, I'm sorry." Finally, I sort of looked down at my watch, and I had about 10 minutes to make it to the plane, and I just whispered, "Jesus, could you please make her stop crying and talking? I mean, she keeps talking and crying. I can't get a word in edgewise. And if she doesn't stop, I'm going to miss my plane, and I can't talk to her." And she began to sort of wipe her tears and blow her nose, and I said, "Frances, there's a little song I bet you'd really like." She said, "If you're going to sing to me, I wouldn't like it." "Oh, please, Frances, you'd love this song. It's a special song. It's for you." Well, she said, "If another woman walked in here and saw you singing to me, she'd think we're weird." I said, "Frances, I'll do it fast, and I'll do it soft." And, well, all right, she said. You could tell she was not the least bit happy about it. Sitting in that lady's room in Atlanta, Georgia, I reached out and I grabbed her hand, and I began to sing at the top of my lungs. "Something beautiful, something good, all Anne's confusion, Jesus understood. All Anne had to offer was brokenness and strife, but he makes something beautiful out of a life." Frances, do you know who I was singing about? Jesus. And even though today is an ugly, painful day for you, Francis, I promise you that Jesus can turn it into something beautiful if you let him. She said, Aunt, how do I know Jesus like you do? Well, it was so late, I just grabbed a card out of my purse and I started writing a prayer on it. Not a special prayer, not a memorized prayer. Just a prayer like, Jesus, I hurt. I'm scared. I'm alone. Jesus, I'm lost. Forgive me. Live with me. And I just wrote very fast, and I handed the card to Francis, and I said, Francis, if you pray this prayer, Jesus will live with you just the way he lives with me. And she said, oh, Anne, please pray it with me. And I looked at my watch, and I just said, oh, Jesus, please keep the plane on the ground. And I reached out, and I just read the prayer right off the card with Francis. And when we finished praying, she looked up and said, Anne, can I just tell you this? She said, I'm a high school math teacher. I'm the meanest teacher in the whole school. Nobody likes me. She said, they call me all kinds of names, but their favorite name for me is the old battle axe. She said, I deserve every name they've ever called me. But she said, Anne, you're the first person in my 42 years to tell me that someone can make something out of me. You aren't lying, are you, Anne? I wouldn't lie to you, Francis. Jesus lives for you. She said, I will never be the same. She said, I was the middle of 12 children. I was always a homely little girl. No one ever thought I was special. She said, I'm going home to be a different person. Oh, God bless you, Francis. I said, I believe for you. I've got to run. I think I might miss this plane. But Francis, remember, we're friends. I grabbed my things. I ran out of the door of the ladies' room. I ran down the corridor to the gate as fast as I could. I changed planes often in Atlanta, so I knew where it was. I almost got to the gate, and I noticed there was no one there, and the ticket agent was sort of scooping up the tickets. And I said, sir, the plane to Miami, it hasn't left yet, has it? Because, sir, I have to be on that plane. You're late, lady. I know, sir. I know I was a little detained, but, sir, please let me on the plane. I've already missed one flight, and I have to do a convention tonight. He said, lady, the door is shut, and they're ready to pull away from the gate on my cue. Sir, I won't ever do this again, but you've got to... He looked at me and said, all right, lady, don't you ever be late again. And I said, I won't, sir, I won't. And he went over and he started to unlock the door to the ramp. And I said, sir, could you give me 2 extra minutes? Lady, he said, I told you, I know, sir, but there's a lady in the restroom and she needs a drink. He said, is there a problem in there? Well, not exactly, sir, but she's had a hard day and I could get her a cold drink in 2 minutes. And he said, put your bags down, lady, and hurry. Thanks. I said, I will. I ran. I ran through the airport corridors. I ran down the escalator stairs to the concession stand. I ordered the biggest paper cup of lemonade they would give me with a cap on the top. I ran up the escalator stairs. I ran past the ticket agent waving 2 fingers. I'll be back in 2 minutes. I almost got to the ladies' room when there, in front of one of those big glass windows, stood Frances, and she was talking to a man, and I didn't know who he was, and I was to execute this thing in 2 minutes, and I suddenly felt very shy. I just sort of ran up and tapped her on the arm and said, Frances, you like lemonade? And she said, Anne, what are you doing here? I love lemonade. I said, well, I thought you might get thirsty, and a cold drink would help. She said, Anne, I was just telling this man about you. I was telling him that today you brought Jesus Christ into my life and that you promised me that he could do something with my life. And I tell you honestly, the roughest, coarsest looking man I ever saw in my whole life leaned over and said, lady, is it true what you told her? It is, sir. Jesus lives for anyone. He said, how? He said, I just got out of prison yesterday. I've been in for 18 years, and it's my first day of freedom, and I'm heading home. I said, Francis, you could tell him how. You've got that card with the prayer on it, and I told the ticket agent 2 minutes, and I think it's been about 10, and if I miss this plane, it'll be my neck. And she seemed a little nervous, but she kind of nodded and said she would try. And I reached out my hand to that man, and he reached out his to me. Sir, Francis will show you how, but remember, Jesus does live for you. And I hugged Francis, and I ran as fast as I could, and I mean, I never saw such an angry ticket agent in my whole life. Lady, you said it would be 2 minutes, and it's been at least 10, and I know, sir, I know. Is the plane still here? I got a little delayed, and he said, look, when I give my word to a lady, I keep it. Now get your bags and get on. I picked up my bags and I stumbled onto the plane and fell in my seat. Nobody on the plane seemed to like me any better than the ticket agent. And I fastened my seatbelt and I cried, and all I could say was, Jesus, you really are love, aren't you? Because Jesus, only you in the whole world knew that Francis and that man were in Atlanta Airport. And you sent me to Atlanta to find them. Jesus, love does change everything. And you say, Anne, why did you want to buy Francis a cup of lemonade? I don't know. I guess because most of my life I've heard Christians talk love. But for me, love is really something you do. It's a cold drink or a plate of cookies. It's a strong handshake or a warm smile. It's saying to anybody anywhere, if there's something I have and you need it, it's yours too. It's laughing with people and crying with them, and it's the simple little gestures that change life. And that day, all I could think of to do for Frances was to give her a cold drink. And Jesus Christ says, by this shall all men know that you are mine, not that you are Catholic or Protestant or Jewish. Jesus Christ says, by this shall all men know that you are mine, that you love one another, and you just can't stop love. Love never gives up. Love always finds a way through. You watch. You wait. You'll see. Yesterday, one of the most special things happened. I was in my room at the hotel, and a girl knocked on my door and said, this is maid service. Can I clean your room? And I said, I'm still in here. Could you come back at 10 o'clock? And she said, okay, Anne. And I wondered why she knew what my name was. I said, who are you? Open the door. You can come in. And she had locked the door, and it was a girl on staff here, and she had a towel over her shoulders. And she said, Anne, my name is Donna. And she said, I just prayed this morning when I got up that the head housekeeper would let me have third floor because I wanted to clean your room for you. I said, Donna, I'm overwhelmed by that. She said, well, I love you, and I couldn't think of anything special I could do but clean your room for you today. I said, Donna, when's your break? She said, 10 o'clock. I said, I'll jump up and get ready real fast, and I'll take your break with you. And you might laugh and say those were two simple gestures, Donna wanting to clean my room and my gesture of just wanting to spend her 10-minute break with her. They were simple gestures, but they were love. And that gesture of Donna's for me changed the color of my day yesterday. It really did. Lonely voices crying in the city. Lonely voices sounding like a child. Lonely voices come from busy people, too afraid to stop a little while. Sir, can I take your hand, or yours, ma'am? Little girl, can I play dolls with you because there's nobody else around to? Can I love you in his name? I moved to Boston, to the waterfront area of Boston, and I said, well, Jesus, my world is my neighborhood. And Jesus, make me a real, honest, tangible person in my neighborhood. Well, Mario is the man who vacuums the halls in my apartment building. And every night around 9:30, you can hear the vacuum. And if I'm home, I always run out to whichever end of the hall Mario is, and I always say, Mario, thank you for vacuuming my hall. It's so special that you vacuum my hall. And he always sort of nods and smiles, good night, Mario. God bless you. And one night, I heard the vacuum, and I ran and opened the door, and Mario was right in front of my door. I said, Mario! He flipped off the vacuum. Mario, thanks. And he just stood there and he started to cry. He said, Anne, no one's ever appreciated me like you before. He said, I've had two jobs for the last 20 years. I vacuum buildings and I sweep the streets of Boston. Mario, you're a real live man with potential. Jesus lives for you. And I'm glad that he helped me to find you in my world. I love you, Mario. Good night, Mario. I'll see you tomorrow night if I'm home. And I shut the door, and I leaned against the wall in my apartment, and I said, Jesus, did I love Mario Am I caring for Mario the way you would care for Mario if you lived in person in my apartment? Because, Jesus, I want to be to Mario just what you would be to Mario if you lived in person in my apartment.
Well, about a month ago, I ran into the lobby. It was 11 o'clock at night, and Mario was down there. I said, Mario, what are you doing here? He said, Ann, I've been waiting for you. He said, I have so much struggle in my life. He said, I know you're a Christian, and I wondered, is there any night you would talk to me? Mario, you name the night, and I'll be home. Well, Mario came up to my apartment 2 nights later, and he wept and cried and that night in my little apartment. 8 months after I met Mario, he invited Jesus Christ into his life. And 2 days later, Mario called and said, Ann, my wife Carol, she was wondering, would you have any extra night for her? Because she'd like to know Jesus too. Mario, which night would be best for Carol? I believe for Mario. I mean, Mario sweeps streets and vacuums halls. But Jesus loves Mario just like he loves me. And Jesus has a world for Mario to change, just like he has a world for me to change and you to change. And I think that's special. Tyndale Publishers called and said, Ann, could you fly to Chicago tomorrow? We want to take your picture for the cover of your new book. And, well, I told them I didn't want my face all over the cover of this new book. I wanted children and maybe a puppy and the color of the sky because I thought Jesus lived in all of that. And they said, well, you can bring two children with you. Well, I thought of these two children across the street. I'd only met them once walking their little puppy, and they seemed alive and candid, and I thought they'd be great for my book. And I knew their father was a Jewish psychiatrist, but that's all I knew about them. So when I hung up from talking to Tyndale Publishers, I called across the street and Dr. Zickelbaum answered. And I said, Dr. Zickelbaum, this is Ann Kimmel across the street. Do you know who I am? And he said, yes. I said, I was wondering if I could take Hal and Susie with me to Chicago tomorrow to be on the cover of my new book. And before he could even respond, it dawned on me that they were Jewish and my book was Christian, and why would they want their kids on the cover of my book? I said, Dr. Zickelbaum, I didn't think this through very clearly. I sort of forgot you're Jewish and my book is Christian. And he said, Ann, I'd love my children to know God the way you know him. Of course you can take Cal and Susie. Let's have dinner tonight and put our plans together. Well, that night we had dinner, and the children had been to all sorts of countries, but they'd never been on the cover of a book. They didn't care if it was a good book or a bad book. Every time a waiter poured water, they would say, Sir, do you see a lady there? She writes books. And we're going to be on the cover of her new book. Well, the next morning we flew to Chicago, and for 5.5 hours in 95 degree heat, we climbed jungle gyms and rode swings and the merry-go-round and the teeter-totters. And afterwards, we went back to the publishing company, and Dr. Taylor, who's done all the paraphrasing for the Living New Bible, put these two Jewish children in his arms and asked them their favorite colors. Susie's was hot pink and Hal's was purple. He told them to wait just a minute. Would you believe he went back and got a purple and a hot pink children's Bible for each of them? We flew home, Hal and Susie and I, and the Zickelbaums were there to pick us up, and we tucked the children in bed, and Dr. Zickelbaum said, I'm going to walk Ann across the street. He walked me across the street. We got to the door of my building, and he reached out and took my arm, and his eyes were just filled. He said, Ann, I'm a psychiatrist, and I believe love is important. But he said, for you to take Hal and Susie with you to Chicago today, for you to share your God and your dreams with them. He said, I will never be the same man. It is crystallized love for me in a way that love has never been crystallized before. And I'd like Jesus to live in us the way he lives in you. He can, Dr. Zickelbaum. When you see the two children on the cover of my new book, and you will understand then why the title of my new book is I Love the Word Impossible. Impossible like Ann. One everyday young woman in her world who believes she can move her neighborhood and her world because she has a giant of a God in her, and he is love. And Jesus and love, that changes everything. About a month later, Dr. Zickelbaum called and said, Ann, we never thought of God or Jesus in our whole lives, do you? He said, we would like Jesus to sanction our marriage. We were married by the justice of the peace. If we had a special ceremony, would you be able to fly in early on a Sunday evening from one of your trips
and be there with us? And I said, sure. Hal was the best man and Susie was the flower girl. And on that Sunday afternoon in Boston, God became a part of their home and sanctioned their marriage. You say, Ann, do you really believe for the Zickelbaums? I do. With all my heart, I do. And the most beautiful thing to me about Jesus Christ and his love is that he lives for Mario and believes for Mario. And he also lives for Dr. Zickelbaum and believes for him. And he has destinies for each of their lives that are special and unique and beautiful. I was just getting ready to go to the elevator to press the button at Massachusetts General Hospital. I'd called on a little boy. He was from the ghetto. He was going in for open heart surgery. It was at Massachusetts General Hospital. And it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I went to press the elevator button, and I noticed this distinguished sort of man at the incubator window. And I just walked over and said, excuse me, sir, is one of the babies in that window yours? And he looked down at me and he said, no, ma'am. He said, it's my daughter's. But he's dying. He's not supposed to make it through the night. I said, which baby is it, sir? He said, it's that one right there. That's my daughter in the white gown. They've let her in since the baby's dying. I just pressed my face against the window and I saw that newborn baby struggle for life. And I saw that young mother sitting next to her firstborn. And I wondered what she must be feeling. I didn't even look up. I just said, sir, are you scared? Very. Are you lonely, sir? Yes. Sir, I said, do you need a friend? Because I'd like to be your friend tonight. I came to call on a little boy, and I have the whole rest of the night, and I could be your friend. And he looked down and smiled and said, that'd be terrific. I could use something. I said, I'll stick right here with you. Sir, you know my best friend is Jesus Christ. He's walked all my lonely roads with me, and sir, I know he'll walk with you tonight. He said, well, I tried to pray a little bit ago, but I never talked to God before, and I don't think God will listen to me. I haven't lived a very good life. Oh, he will, sir. He lives for you, sir. He lives for everybody. I said, sir, there's a little song I bet you just love. He said, I don't know. He said, you know, this is a hospital corridor. And I said, I know, sir, but I could do it soft and it's perfect for you. Though the way be bright, though the way be dim, I'll trust the Lord, I'll lean on him, because he loves me, sir. He loves you. That changes everything. Sir, if the baby lives or dies, Jesus Christ can turn it into something meaningful and beautiful for you, because love works that way. And I stood by his side, and it was after midnight, and suddenly it dawned on me that I had parked in a tollway zone, and, well, I got a little nervous because it's a bad part of Boston, sort of, and I said, sir, I just remembered I parked in a tollway zone, and I'm a little worried. I better go check my car. But I'm wondering, do you think you'll be all right the rest of the night? And he looked down, and he smiled, and I reached out and grabbed his hand. And he nodded. I said, sir, even though I'm leaving, I'm your friend. And I walk with you tonight, and Jesus does. And even though we're going, I want you to remember that Jesus is a part of this experience with you. And he will work whatever happens into something beautiful for your life if you open your life to him. And he cried, and I did. And I looked in the window at that little baby one more time, and I went over and pressed the elevator button, and the doors opened, and I walked in. And I figured since it was after midnight, and the elevator had to go from 8 to 1, and probably who could hear me in an elevator, I leaned against the side of the elevator, and at the top of my lungs, I sang, if I can help somebody as I go along, sir, can I be your friend? If I can cheer somebody with a word of song, Eric, can I hold you on my lap? Can I squeeze you tight? Can I kiss your little face because there's nobody else to? If I can help somebody along life's way, then my living can't be in vain. That's my story. I walk with my back straight and my head thrown high. I believe for my world. I'm not scared. I have a giant of a God. I'm out to change things. I will. I was at a huge Jewish celebration from some people across the street. They were mainly doctors and attorneys. And they invited me. Well, I said, Jesus, this is my neighborhood. I mean, I'm scared to go be a part of that party, but I'm going to go for a few minutes because I'm out to win my neighborhood. And I walked into the lobby of this big, elegant hotel in Boston, and they took the elevator up to the mezzanine, and here were these several hundred, you know, ultra-sophisticated people. I was the only Gentile and the only Christian. And I walked in and said, Jesus, I don't want to be scared. I don't want to feel inhibited and insecure. You're the Lord of my life, and I want to walk into this room with confidence and a sense of well-being. Jesus, I want to be a Christian in this neighborhood. And I walked into that party and kind of sat and smiled at people and sort of sat in a corner. And suddenly this sort of very suave man walked over to me and he sat down and said, I'm fascinated by you. You seem to have such a sense of well-being in this crowd. And I said, sir, would you really like to know why? And he sort of looked at me and kind of nodded. I said, it's because Jesus is the Lord of my life and he's changed everything for me. Wow, he said, that's pretty heavy. I never met a woman with such a spiritual nature. And I began to share with him, and he said, you know, I'd like to have lunch with you. He said, is there any day next week you're free? I said, any day you tell me, I'll be there. So that next Wednesday, I met Joel Kozol at 1 o'clock for lunch. He's a Harvard Law grad, magna cum laude. His clients are Muhammad Ali and all kinds of people. I don't know, it's impressive to me. I met him at 1 o'clock. I sang to him. I shared Jesus to him. And 3 hours later, he said, Ann, he said, what time is it? I said, I don't know. And I looked down at my watch. I said, I don't think you're going to like this. It's 4 o'clock. He looked at me and he said, I tell you honestly, Ann, I've never had an experience like this in my life. He said, I'm going to come hear you speak sometime. He said, you really believe in Jesus, don't you? I do, Joel. And when I spoke at the Bicentennial Luncheon in Washington, D.C., Joel Kozol came. That time, he was the only Jew in the middle of 1,000 Gentiles. And at the close of my speech, I looked down into that crowd, and all I could say was, Joel Kozol, I love you. You are Jewish, and I am Christian. But you came from Boston to hear my dreams today. You say, Ann, do you believe Kozol? I do. I do believe for him. And sometimes we think that men like that will never open their lives to Jesus. But my heart is steady and my faith is strong. And I eat lunch with Joel every week. And every week he brings different friends. And every week I sing my same little songs to them. Only 1 week I brought my sister flew in and I said, Jan, you're going to lunch with me with these Jewish men. And she said, Ann, I'm just going to say one thing. Don't start singing to them. Well, I didn't say I would or I wouldn't. I didn't say anything. So when we got to the restaurant, we were sort of halfway finished with our meal and it was going pretty well. I said, Jan, please let's sing them a song. And Jan looked at those men and said, I don't believe she's doing this. I told her not to. I said, all right, we'll do it outside. As soon as we finish, I won't embarrass you in here. We can sing to them outside. And all the men, Joel laughed and said to all of his fellow attorneys who he had brought to lunch, he said, she does this, you know, but I think you'll like it. Well, we walked outside the restaurant when we were finished, and Jan wasn't too happy. But she started singing with me, and suddenly I looked up and there were about 10 others who had followed us out of the restaurant. I mean, just coming out of the restaurant to go to their cars, and there Jan and I were, but the sun was out and the wind was in our faces, and I sang with all of the God in me. And when it was over, they all applauded, probably not because we sounded so good, they just thought we were brave. But Jan and I ran to the car, and Jan said, oh, Ann, I've just got to trust you. It seems to work every time, even when I think it's not going to. Jan said, Ann, you really believe for those men, don't you? I do. Another time I went to a dinner party across the street, and finally a man came up to me, and I knew someone had whispered, you know, that man over there, he owns the Irish Airlines. And well, I kind of nodded and smiled his direction, and pretty soon he came over. He said, you know, you walked in 30 minutes ago, and you've talked about Jesus about 6 or 7 different times. He said, I'm fascinated by that. I said, I guess it's because Jesus is my whole life, and he's changed everything for me. And he said, that's so interesting. He said, I have four sisters who are nuns. And I said, Jesus, isn't that terrific? That's why he liked me. I reminded him of his sisters. And the next night he called me at my apartment and said, he's the owner of a large hotel chain, and he said, could you come to the hotel tonight for dinner? There's a young black judge and some attorneys and a young Catholic priest. And he said, I would just like for them to hear your story. I said, I'd love to. And I walked away saying, Jesus, that's my world. That's my neighborhood. Jesus, make me one honest, tangible, real person in my neighborhood. Now, the people I probably love the most in my neighborhood, I confess, are Tony, who takes care of the shrubs, and Mario, who does the halls, and Kelly, who sits at the desk, and Frank and Joe, who are in charge of the building. I love them because they're such simple, strong people, and every morning they're the first people I pray for. I am out to love Tony and Kelly and Joe and Frank to Jesus, just as I am to love Jerry Dunphy and Joel Kozol and the others. I am just one simple person. But I have God and his love. You say, Ann, are you a Miss Pollyanna? No. Sometimes I cry hard and sometimes I feel insecure. And sometimes the world seems so big and I'm not intimidated enough to give up. But sometimes just a little frightened by how big the world is and how simple and small I am. And on New Year's Eve, I had to fly from San Francisco to Atlanta to speak at a convention. I had to tell my family goodbye, and I was sort of feeling sad about it. And we got to the airport 5 minutes before the plane was to leave. You can see I have a lot of close calls. But I said to the ticket agent right there, sir, an aisle seat as close to the front as possible. And he flipped off a little ticket that said 19C, and he put it on my ticket. I said, sir, don't put me in the back of a plane. I don't like flying in the back of planes. I get sick in the back of planes, sir. Please don't put me back. He said, lady, take it or leave it. It's the last seat available. You're late, you know. I picked up my ticket and looked at him and said, oh, brother, Delta Airlines, you make me tired. And I walked off. And I started to tell my family goodbye, and I said, I've got to apologize. And my brother-in-law said, the ticket agent is right behind you. And I turned around and said, sir, will you forgive me? I don't usually act like that, sir. That was obnoxious of me. It's not your problem. It's my problem, sir. I'm sorry. I really am. I don't like to act like that. And I just burst into tears and cried and cried, and the look in his eyes, it was as if he said, it's all right, lady. Don't cry. You aren't that terrible. But I got on the plane, and my prayer was, Jesus, thank you for reminding me how much I have yet to learn about love. Thank you for reminding me what I am when I'm not in touch with you. Jesus, make me everything you ever dreamed I could be in your name. I must have embarrassed you today, God, but I want to learn and grow. I want to be a real person in my world in your name. Remember, God loves you and I love you, and that's the way it should be. Isn't that simple and uncomplicated? God loves you and I love you, and that's the way it should be. You and God and I and love. We'll move the world. You wait. You watch. You'll see. Please dream with me. I need you. Thank you.